the Dharma to the Sangha. I want to talk today about something that your master spoke about at times. And this is kind of coming on my screen to talk about. And at the same time, I don't pretend to understand it. So we'll just kind of see what comes up. This may be a remarkably short talk. It has to do with what's called the familiarity of the opposites. And by that I mean the opposites' familiarity with one another. So I'll start with something that we all have experience of, and then I'll contrast that with the somewhat different situation in which the opposites are being brought together to be harmonized. And that is what is meant by the familiarity of the opposites. So let's think for a moment about those kind of swings that we all go through at times, from opposite to opposite. And I made a little list of them here just in case my brain wouldn't function and come up with a few of them. So I'll just read my little list I just wrote real quickly. And of course, there's many of them, but here's some major ones. Desire and revulsion. In other words, attraction and revulsion. That's one pair of opposites. Elation and sadness. Elation and disappointment. That's another one. Pride and shame. That's another one. Praise and blame. Love and hate. You go on and on in the list, you know. Sometimes we're stuck so long in one opposite, we forget that it's mate out there somewhere. But the tendency is to bounce from one to the other over some period of time. If one spends a lot of time in one opposite, then eventually one will spend a bunch of time in its matching pair, its mate, as it were, its opposite. So if you, if you're going around prideful, and then something changes, circumstances change in such a way that your humanity gets exposed, then there's a tendency to go into the shame side of things. If one's going around elated, and when something happens and the stuffing gets pulled out of the, taken out of that, or the rug gets pulled out from under you, we've all experienced this, and then we're this disappointment and sadness. And so on. Desire and revulsion, that's a really common one. I can think of all kinds of things, places in which I've experienced that in my life. Pretty visceral stuff, some of these. Pretty visceral stuff. Raw. Emotionally raw. You really get whacked. The problem, of course, with the opposites, when we're stuck in the opposites, either on one side or the other, we act out of it. And then we compound the problem, creating kind of mountains of of suffering built upon mountains of suffering. Well, of course, there is a way out of it, and it's called training. It's called, you know, walking the middle path. The path that transcends the opposites. And it's a part of this process that the opposites have to be brought together. The pairs of opposites have to be brought together. In the right circumstances, in precisely the right circumstances and conditions, then they have to be allowed to harmonize with one another. Again, in the precisely right conditions and circumstances. And as this happens, it takes all the stuffing out of both of them. All the passion is taken out of them. And then conversion can happen. So if we think about the state of swinging, you know, the state of mind and emotion of being swinging between the opposites, there's highs and lows and there's drama, you know. But if we want the opposites to be able to become familiar with one another, I like that term because it implies familiarity, implies them kind of parts of ourselves that don't know one another but that are paired with one another coming together in a context of mutual enlightening. Oh, I didn't know you were there. Oh, I didn't know you were there. Like bringing together these long-lost separated twins, you know, like sometimes see on the news, you know, where these people were born twins and then got separated or brought together, you know, 40 years later, and what a joy it is for them to meet one another at last. And so I think it's, you know, obvious that the context in which they're brought together here is the context of meditation. Oh, look, I gave away the secret. You know, the context in which they're brought together is the context of meditation. And we're talking about something that is an exquisite thing. In its initial stages, it can be because there's so much pain, a lot wrapped up in these opposites. You know, at first it may not feel so exquisite. But one day the exquisiteness of it is fully experienced. It may be that in part this talk came from a question that someone recently asked me where it came up just purely intuitively to answer the question, respond to the question, because the person had posed a pair of opposites. And in my mind, as I kind of sat there with the question, what was good to say, in my mind there kind of appeared a kind of image of like they were kind of like fists and they were kind of like jewels at the same time, brought together in the hara. And so my answer to the person, I was answering from the heart, not from the head, so I didn't really fully understand what I was saying, was, you know, somehow that to bring these two opposites together in the heart and see that they're recognized as two jewels brought together, placed upon the altar of meditation, the altar of the heart, for the eternal to help. Because the two opposites, each of them represents an aspect of suffering and an aspect of confusion. An aspect of pain and an aspect of confusion. While again, this is something that the teachings on reharmonization speak of, and it's something that our master talked about, it's not something that I pretend to understand intellectually. And it's something that everyone who's done a lot of meditation has some experience. Now, actually has a lot of experience of, but it's just that we may not know we have the experience of it. When we speak of bringing something into meditation, well, what does that itself mean? You know, what is the place, the spiritual place of meditation? So often expressed in terms of vihara. But we're not just talking about the physical body and the area of the physical body that's called dhara, which is down in the abdomen and in the area below the sternum in the chest. That's not that's you know, part of the meaning of dhara, but you know, it's also just a purely spiritual place. And what I always come back to and what Rim Master always emphasized was stillness. That the opposites are forms of agitation. Each opposite is inextricably linked with the other opposite. Even if usually or often, not always, but often only one of them is very evident at a time. So, when we bring that which is agitated, we bring even one of the pairs of opposites into the stillness of meditation, then whether we know it or not, its mate, as it were, joins it there. Because they are inextricably linked. And there, in the stillness of meditation, the opposites can become familiar with one another. The estranged twins, as it were, can come to know one another. And part of that knowing, part of that recognition, is a recognition that, oh, you're my other face, as it were. I know myself, but I didn't know that you are my other face. Well, I realize this is asking a bit of an imaginative leap, but let's just imagine for a moment that the opposites actually are like two separate people who are twins in a way, and they haven't known each other, and they come together. Well, when one opposite looks at the other for the first time and fully sees itself reflected in the other, it gets a view of itself that it never had before. Oh, is this how I look? Think of them as identical twins. Is this actually how I look? Okay, so let's take it beyond looking. Is this what I really am? Is this what I really am? Now think about, take a minute to look at a couple of opposites in this, a pair of opposites. Desire and revulsion, that's the top of my list here. That's a great one there. Think about one somehow gets the object of one's desire. And then one is satiated, and then more is offered, but one is satiated, and then one is revulsed by the very thing that attracted one. One is repelled. I used to have that with Oreo cookies when I was a kid. to rise to the sublime here. I'd get a whole pack, I'd buy a whole pack of Oreo cookies and read a book, you know, and be munch away on Oreo cookies. When I worked my way about two-thirds through that whole bag, you know, then I was off Oreo cookies for a long time after that. I was off Oreos for a long time. I love Oreos. I still love Oreos, but I wouldn't do that now. But I was off them for a long time, for months maybe, before I'd try that again. They want to look at an Oreo. Well, there you have a good little example. There's actually many areas in life where people experience this. Many areas. I had another one I'm using rather kind of externalized examples, but they're still, you know, they're still good examples because it's the principle's the same, no matter what it is. And I had one in athletics that I've often talked about where I'd really want to win, and then sometimes I actually would win. Then when I won, I always felt disappointed because I had won and someone else had lost. In order for me to win, someone else had to lose. I always felt, even if I won, I didn't win by cheating, but I always kind of felt like I cheated in a way. And so the winning actually, even when I won, I felt like I'd lost in a way, spiritually, because the greed to win was a self-defeating. The opposites are familiar with one another. And when the opposites really become familiar with one another, when they're brought together in meditation, and they see each other, they see themselves in each other, then the very root impulse to go down the road of those opposites, that pair of opposites, diminishes greatly, because one sees that whichever opposite one goes with, it always leads to it's always inextricably linked to its identical twin. You see what I'm saying? That where there is a great craving for praise, you know, the susceptibility to blame is also, to being pained by blame, is directly proportional to the degree of attachment to praise. So the pain of blame is always the potential in enjoying praise. You see what I'm saying? The pain of the opposite is always in the other pair as potential. By bringing the opposites together, allowing them to come together in the hara and to meet one another, get to know one another, then the two jewels together, being brought together, get one. I think, remember I said each of them has its own little kind of jewely point. Well, when they're brought together in the hara meditation, both points point in the same direction, up. This is in my mind's picture. And they form together one bigger point, pointing towards the eternal. And that's where the opposites are starting to reharmonize, not just with each other, but with the eternal. The opposites become familiar with one another, and when they know sufficiently their own nature as forms of suffering, they then turn towards that which is the cure for suffering. Then in this process of turning towards that which is the cure for suffering, their own true nature is revealed, and that's why they are not just little blobs of poop in the aura, they're actually jewels. Because what is truly within them is the longing for the eternal. They somehow got externalized and confused. Now think for a moment the point of view that I'm expressing here and how it can contrast with another point of view about the opposites, which is to, in some way, despise them or think badly of them, and that one must just get rid of the opposites. Be rid of it, and then one will be enlightened. See, that way of thinking, which is itself an expression of the opposites, does not help you bring them together in peace within the hara and allow them to become familiar with one another. Do you see the implications of this for what it means to have, to truly have compassion for oneself? Not a driver's seat-y kind of compassion, but a compassion that is, now how do I say this? Dispassionate compassion. The compassion that means that one is doing the right thing for the spiritual need. One is not trying oneself to be Kanzian. One is allowing body and mind to be the field within which the work of the eternal is done. And what we call the hara is the place where this happens. Spiritual place within which this happens. Think of the. Here's a worldly metaphor, and it may not be the best, but think of old President Carter and the Arabs and the Jews at the peace talks, Camp David peace talks. I think President Carter is a good person to use because he's a very good man and a religious man. Who genuinely has lived his life trying to promote peace. So this is a better choice of a metaphor than some might be, and it's only a metaphor. But think of the opposites as the Arabs and Jews, Arabs and Israelis brought together at Camp David in the Hara, Camp David. Now, what do they do at Camp David? It's a very protected place. Incredibly protected place. And it's where people who are involved in the very difficult life of trying to guide their countries, their people, where they can come together and rest, and in that context, where they can come together and try to resolve their differences. So I wouldn't want to push this too far, but the Hara is the kind of Camp David for the Arabs and Israelis of the opposites within us, and our own will, our own volition, our choice to meditate, our choice to follow the path of the precepts, our choice to take refuge in stillness. Is like the Jimmy Carter who brings them together. Then we have to trust the eternal. Having brought them together, having allowed them to come together, we have to trust the eternal to do the essential transformational work, which only the eternal can do. And the potential for that is inherent within the opposites themselves. Not something created by us or our will or some strategy that we form. There's no strategy in this at all. It's more responding to a blood and bones intuitive sense of spiritual, of the spiritual path that we need to walk so that this harmonization can happen. Even when in the earlier phases of this process, this coming together of the opposites within the heart is so, you know, sometimes intensely painful. I've sometimes had people tell me just how much pain is in their heart. You know, well, it will not always be that way. Will not always be that way. That's the opposites not getting along yet. Not getting along yet. Yet one day they will. One day they will be familiar with one another. They will not hate one another. They will not war with one another. They will not strive against one another. They will come together and form one unity that then points toward the eternal. And a great arrow of longing for the eternal will rise up on a flood of the water of the Spirit. Mixing my metaphors a bit here, but it's hard to express these things in words. It really and truly is the case. It's not some kind of romantic or poetic exaggeration. That every part of ourselves, every aspect of our karmic inheritance is immaculate from the first. And when we bring all of the opposites together in the hara, allow them to meet one another, to become familiar with one another, to undergo the process of spiritual transformation, then their immaculate nature is revealed. And then we know there is then nothing from the first. So where can the dust alight? Shri Buddha.